Welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folk. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, one of the happiest men you will find in all of America, because a second consecutive World Series appearance could be just around the corner for his beloved St. Louis Cardinals. Mickey, are you feeling that victory is on the way?
Well, we need one more win here. Got two games to do it, so we're looking good. It's kind of ironic. Last year we had to win 11 games to win our 11th championship in 2011. This year we need to win 12 games to win our 12th championship in 2012, and we are one victory away from the World Series.
One victory away, and you're betting that they're going to go to the World Series again, aren't you? Because you're all lined up for the World Series. You will be there if the Cardinals
are there. I will be there for the games in St. Louis. Got plane tickets, got a hotel, got tickets lined up. They just need to win one more game to get there.
They will. Mickey, I'm rooting for the Cardinals, too. So between the two of us, they'll pull through. Love to continue to talk baseball, but the real focus for today's program is radium. The last time that we spoke, Mickey, you ended our previous interview here in Toronto telling listeners that radium was the first radioactive element ever discovered. So let's pick it up from there. Fill us in on the history.
Well, it's one of these alkaline earth metals. It's highly reactive and highly radioactive. It's so radioactive, in fact, that it luminesces somewhat of a faint blue, and that led to the original uses of it, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. It's a white silvery metal, which immediately oxidizes black. It was discovered in 1898 by Marie and Pierre Curie. It's a very rare element, mainly because of its extreme radioactive nature. It doesn't stay around very long. About one part per trillion in the Earth's crust. And it comes from uranium ores. It's very low trace amounts in uranium ores, something on the order of 700 parts per billion in a ton of uranium oxide.
And you mentioned the people who originally discovered this, the Curies, back in 1898. My research, Mickey, I have found that apparently, and you can elaborate on this for me if you can, that the lab notebooks used by the Curies are just too highly contaminated to be safely handled today. Does that sound reasonable?
It sounds reasonable. I have not come along that factoid, but it wouldn't surprise me. Madame Curie actually died of radium poisoning. She had something called aplastic anemia, which is essentially destruction of the bone marrow. Mm-hmm. And because radium is an alkaline earth metal, it can substitute for calcium in bones, which it kills and mutates cells, and especially bone marrow. Mm-hmm. And so people that have cancer undergo bone marrow transplants.
Well, let's look back, Mickey, on its early uses. Very, very dangerous stuff. And this, you know, really resulted in some interesting stories along the way. But to recap for us how it was used in years gone by.
Well, it's got four isotopes, the longest, which has a half-life of about 1,600 years, and the lowest at 4 days. So it's a product of the decay of uranium-238. The eventual daughter product that's not radioactive is lead, but it goes through a lot of elements before it gets there. It emits alpha particles, and the daughter products emit beta and gamma rays, beta mm-hmm. particles and gamma rays. It immediately goes to radon gas. So it was discovered through the extraction from uranium, and in the 19th century, uranium basically had no use except for some minor research in the late 19th century. So it came from originally Czech silver mines in a place that I've been, which is in the Ore Mountains along the current Czech and German border. So it was recovered from as a source from uranium mining tails. It had a few applications historically. It was originally used for luminescent paint if you owned a watch in the 1960s that glowed in the dark, you know what I'm talking about. Yep. I have one of those, which was given to me on my 7th birthday, and I didn't like it, so I threw it away in a month, told my mom I lost it, and I never wore a watch since. But in the 1920s, it was used, 1920s to the mid-1960s, was used for luminescent dials in watches and clocks and instrumentation, and it led to the infamous Radium Girls lawsuit, mm-hmm. which were these women in Illinois that painted dials with the paint, and they would they used camel hair brushes, and they would lick the brush after a few applications to keep it pointed,
right.
And it led to extreme radium poisoning. A lot of women died, had serious effects, but this lawsuit was really the first occupational disease lawsuit, and it led to some labor laws that needed to be implemented. Other uses, it really became part of medical quackery. It was used in toothpaste to whiten your teeth, hair creams to keep your hair from falling out, food items, radioactive water, which was supposed to cure everything from cancer to insanity to impotence. And we saw the growth of radioactive hot springs. Mm-hmm. For instance, there's a town in New Mexico called Radium Springs. Similarly, in Georgia, Montana,
British Columbia,
California, Hot Springs, Arkansas, Saratoga Springs, New York, were all radium hot springs, which were supposed to have restorative powers.
And there's a radium hot springs in British Columbia, too, in fact.
I think they were all over the place.
Yeah.
It was just in the early 20th century, there was all sorts of quackery going on in the medical profession or the pseudo medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you know, they put cocaine and heroin in cough medicine, so
mm-hmm.
and Coca-Cola. So by the mid 1930s or 40s, it became known how dangerous this stuff was.
Yeah, and I guess really it was the Radium Girls case which kind of brought it to the forefront and alerted a large part of the population to this, and that's, I guess, when everybody said, whoa, you know, what are we doing here with this stuff? You know, people are dying because of it.
And so there's never been very much on the planet because of extreme radioactivity. It decays quite rapidly. Latest I found, I think this was probably the height of the amount that was available worldwide in 1954. The world supply was 2.3 kilograms. It doesn't really have any applications anymore. It was used for successfully as a cancer treatment,
yep.
But now we found better isotopes that are not quite so dangerous.
Okay, now, radium, you said off the top, you know, it's found in uranium ores. I guess it's in such minute quantities that it's just left in the uranium ores when it's pulled up out of the ground, correct? I mean, there's no use for it today.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 700 parts per billion in a uranium ore, one ton of pure pitch blend or uraninite. So most uranium ores will run in mines, even in the Athabasca, average grade is probably 5 or 10%. So
mm-hmm.
there's not much radium in uranium ores, and but certainly its decay product to radon gas is of concern in uranium mining. That's why people wear respirators.
Before we wrap it up, Mickey, let's delve into the research of radium. What people were discovering along the way, and I guess really, you know, there's a positive benefit to the research that they did in radium. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, it played a crucial role in research into the theory of the atom. Rutherford bombarded alpha particles from radium into the crystal structure of gold, which led to the theory of the atom. In addition, radium being a part of uranium ores, eventually uranium was found to be fissile, and that led directly to the uranium bomb, atomic bomb, and nuclear power, which now supplies about 1/7 of the electricity in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States, 1 out of every 5 people that turn on electrical light do that with nuclear power.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that point. Mickey, next time out, what do you want to talk about?
Well, here's what I'm thinking about. We've been operating on the extreme left side of the periodic table, and I'm thinking about flipping completely over the other side and start to talk about the noble gases. And the reason for this is there is an extreme shortage of helium in the world right now. And I witnessed this recently at the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta. So let's talk about helium, what it's used for, and the shortage, and where we might find some more helium, which is a critical gas for many applications in the world.
Okay, sounds good. And you know what else? I think a little bit of St. Louis Cardinal chat will creep into our conversation as well.
Well, I hope so. If it turns out negative, I may not be too attuned to talking about it. But
we'll see.
We're eternal optimists as St. Louis Cardinal fans, and we are the second best team historically in baseball.
Okay, well, that's part of your job as a geologist. You have to be an eternal optimist, correct?
Absolutely, Rob.
Okay, thanks very much, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.